Welcome back to the Best-Selling Author Podcast, this week's episode sponsored by No One. Here we talk to best-selling authors about their books and how they became a bestseller. And we have the fortune of having Brian Cohen on this week. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you for having me, CJ. Happy to be here.
So first, I'll tell you what I kind of tell everybody, Brian, is thank you for your willingness to come on here and shine a light on the process that is, you know, getting published and marketing, and it's a beast. So, you know, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, you're welcome. And it is a beast. You're absolutely right. And I feel like we're unpacking the giant IKEA furniture without the little weird man on the instruction manual helping us out.
Right.
So I'm trying to be that weird little man.
Yeah, without that little man, we wouldn't have gotten too far. But, like I told you before we started recording, Brian, and this is just being fully transparent with, everyone listening, is I would not have any idea what I was doing when it come to marketing until I hired your consulting firm. I was in the wrong genre. I was in the wrong categories altogether for my first book, because as my first book progressed to my second, my genre was changing. And pretty much all the people who work for you, worked at your company, said, no, 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 you can't do that. You can't switch genres. It's a big no-no. And I'm telling you, companies like yours are so important for brand new authors. And for those of you listening, I know all of you have a great story to tell, but there's no point going to market until you have a plan in place.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad we've been able to help you. And we, like I was saying off the air, we love doing this stuff. This is, you know, what gets us out of bed in the morning. We want to help people. We want to help people who haven't really had to figure out marketing for whatever, you know, why would you need to, if you work a 9-to-5, if you're going to school, you don't need to figure out how to market yourself. And so it's been really fun to kind of shine a light on a system. I would certainly not say we're the only system, but no. A system that can be really helpful.
Well, I just kept on seeing your stuff on social media. So if you guys aren't following Brian, I'd highly recommend it. And for me, Brian, writing in general is kind of this chaotic, beautiful process of, like, you don't know exactly how the authors are going to flesh themselves, or the characters are going to flesh themselves out. And for me, if I feel like I could have done a better job, at least with my first book, if I had the wisdom that I had from you guys. But, you know, kind of leading into our first question, Brian, something that I ask everybody is, you know, was there a specific moment in time, you know, where you knew you had to start writing the books that you've written? Was there a specific moment? Was it a culmination of moments? Can you kind of take us through that?
Yeah. And I, like you said, I know it's different kind of for everybody. I think that, you know, I'm an ideas person. I like to go into the Clifton strengths. I'm number one strategic. I'm number 11 futuristic, but it comes into my brain very often. And I love coming up with ideas and thinking of them all the way through till the end. And like with some of the books I've written, both fiction with my viral superhero series and nonfiction with my self-publishing series that has an Amazon ads book and an email marketing book, like I got excited. I saw the whole idea of these books all the way till the end. With the fiction, I wanted it to be kind of my own take on the old Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But what if the cheerleader type was actually both the superhero and also Giles at the same time? And so that was kind of my idea that pushed me on that. And with the nonfiction, it was, there's so many dry guides out there. What if there was a fiction story in the middle of this nonfiction book that was helping people to see the emotional side of setting up ads and trying to connect with readers. And so it was when the idea came and I started brainstorming on it until I saw it go to the logical end, that's when I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing now. This is going to work. And those are kind of what those moments look like for me.
Amazing. So did I know different people, like for me, I have my notes app always just kind of like saved to my bottom of my iPhone.
Yep.
Did you take a bunch of notes on notes app? Like, how did you kind of write down? Because you and I both know sometimes ideas can come at you, like when you're in the checkout, you know, at the grocery store.
Oh, yeah. Three ways. I will set a reminder to myself if I'm in the car. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, device of choice, remind me in 30 minutes about this thing. I definitely also use the notes app. Notes app for me is usually for fleshing out. The initial ideas are kind of reminders, and then the notes app is for fleshing out. And I haven't done this as much lately. Maybe this is more of a just the rhythm of my day currently, but something I have done is I would open my voice recorder app on my phone, and I would just do a 20-minute brain dump verbally. And so those are kind of the three ways I've fleshed those kinds of ideas out. It usually goes reminder, notes app, and optional third step is to do a brain dump. And then I will get the brain dump transcribed. I will, you know, I know there's a million AI ways to do it now. I still do the old fashioned, send it to a real person to transcribe it. I use Rev for that, rev.com. And so I'll transcribe the brainstorm and you know, you can speak faster than you can write. So sometimes I'll have a whole bunch of random ideas thrown into that voice file.
That's what part of the beautiful part for me, at least for creativity, Brian, I hope you can agree. It's like, it's this beautiful, for me, I always equate feminine energy to this beautiful chaos, but without some masculinity to kind of make it more linear. You know, it becomes, it's just this chaos. But without that chaos, I don't think I'd be able to write a good story. You know, you just kind of never know what's going to happen sometimes. So I don't know if you've ever done this with your outlining process. I know some authors say, hey, you know, they don't stick to a firm outline, or my process is I kind of dump out all my ideas onto, you know, these ideas for plot points. And then what I do is then I structure them based on where I, you know, however many chapters I want, here's where it makes sense linearly. And then I'll write a synopsis, and then I'll actually start writing the chapter, which still leaves some space for, you know, some improvisation. Right, so I'm just wondering, you know, kind of, you know, from you working with so many authors and, you know, a writer yourself, you know, I'm interested to know, you know, what your thoughts are on that.
I'm definitely more of a plotter, which is funny because I started out in improv comedy, and so it's the opposite of plotting. It's you know, all pantsing all the time on stage. Mm-hmm. But even that was always looking for patterns. You're looking for patterns, and then you're completing a logical pattern on stage. And so it ends up being sort of plotty in the middle. Like, there's an obvious way to complete something usually, but I will say that for me, if I can vaguely outline with story beats or with educational beats, as in kind of the nonfiction, I want there to be, I want it to feel like it's taking someone somewhere. I want it to feel like they've really moved from one place to a whole other place. I want them to, especially in the education, there has to be like a little restraint. You want to kind of info dump everything. I mean, we've all been to those author conferences where there'll be a 40-minute presentation and someone will say, oh, well, usually it takes me 3 hours, so I'll just condense that 3 hours into 40 minutes, which then is info drinking from the fire hose, but there are ways to make it so that your 40 minutes or what have you is a light introduction while still dropping knowledge bombs without it being overwhelming. And so it's really interesting to try to strike that balance in my nonfiction books, trying to think logically. Okay, a person is trying to set up their email list. Well, where are they really starting? What do they really need to do first? And for a lot of people, they think it's, oh, I need to get up with MailerLite or ConvertKit or whatever. I need to figure out the software. I need to do all that. But I was thinking about it and I'm like, well, what do writers already know how to do? They don't necessarily come out of the writer womb knowing how to figure out some weird software. But what do they know how to do? Well, they know how to write. It's like, okay, well, how about instead of banging your head against the wall for 10 hours trying to figure out why when you move this button, it messes everything up, what if you started by actually writing the emails that are going to go into that automatic sequence that goes out when people sign up, and do that first? Mm-hmm. And thinking of it in terms of, okay, well, what's an easier step for people? What is a easier way for people to go forward? That is a lot of my process when it comes to plotting the nonfiction kind of stuff. The fiction stuff, you know, I don't think I have anything necessarily unique to say on it, but because my nonfiction gets to have a little fiction in the middle, I get a little bit of peanut butter and chocolate together for me at that moment.
Amazing. I know, you know, definitely with, you know, fiction, it's like you kind of want to hold back information until as long as we can until the end. And interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar in that way. It's like this, you know, thinking of writing a character with a secret.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that where you're writing an educator with a secret that I can tell you the exact way to do things, but you know, we need to think about it, not necessarily in the, what is the fastest way I can think to teach this thing? No. What is the way I can teach this thing so that people will stick with me and understand it as long as possible till they get to the point that they're deep enough in their understanding that they're like, well, I didn't get stuck at step one. I got stuck at step seven, and everyone gets stuck at some point. But, you know, I got stuck at step seven, but I already did one through seven. So I'm going to keep going instead of just saying like, well, I couldn't get into it even for 30 seconds. So it's worthless.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And I know this is more for, so the authors listening out there, the writers listening out there, that they know it's not just a, hey, I'm going to sit down for a weekend and write a book. Yeah. Did you ever have some, you know, did you ever set time in the morning, afternoon? How did you kind of set time? Or were you one of those people who just wrote when they could, you know, on the train, bus, wherever you could write, Brian?
I'm a routine person. I actually, a couple years back, I thought the only time I could write was just at the crack of dawn. That's what I did for my eight novels that I wrote. I wrote all of them early, mm-hmm. very early. But I wrote most of them before I had a kid. And so things do change when you have a kid. And now my kid's getting to school in the morning, and that definitely changes things. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to just have to wake up earlier. I tried it. It didn't work. And so what I did was, all right, I have to write, but I can't figure out what time to write. So I tried a few things, tried the afternoon, and ended up finding a time in kind of mid to late morning that, okay, my preconceived notion was that I can only write at 5 a.m. before everything else. And I had to test that hypothesis. I couldn't, like, and I think creatively we have to test all of our assumptions, because we might be wrong. We might think, oh, I have to, you know, have 3 cups of coffee first. Like, maybe, maybe not. Oh, I can't write at night. Even though it's the only time I have available, I can't write at night. Maybe. You don't know. And so I found this mid-morning time. I would block out about an hour, hour and a half. And it didn't always work, but I got the work done, and then I was able to finish.
Funny you said that, because I'm kind of in that stage now. I woke up really early. I woke up at 5 o'clock this morning, because my son started waking up at, you know, 6:30 just randomly in the morning. So what's cool though is I'm starting getting to that mentality where you're at now. It's like, if I start in the morning early, great. But if I don't, you know, and I get to sleep in, sometimes I'm happier in the, you know, around my family later in the day. Or when I start in the morning, you know, before 10, 11 o'clock, you know, momentum, you know, gets more momentum.
Right.
So I know you would just recommend to, you know, the writers out there, just like, you know, write when you can, right? You know, go out, experiment, you know, have an open mind. And for me, it's like, if I crushed and I wrote 2,000 words the next day, it's always easier for me to, you know, have another good writing day, you know, the next day. So for those, you know, listening, you know, momentum, it's a thing.
Yeah.
But I'd really like to know, though, kind of about, I guess, the origin of when you really wanted to start speaking to the marketing aspect. Was that in an effort to help yourself with your own books? Because that's where I'm at now. And that's exactly why I'm doing this podcast, to put myself out there, to market myself. Because when we're open to, you know, critic, you know, we're more likely to, you know, get the results we want, right? Which are book sales. And so can you kind of take us through that, Brian?
I have teaching in my blood. My grandmother taught, my parents both taught, and I love teaching. And so I really was focused on being an author at first, but I kept finding myself wanting to teach about, I had just learned this thing, I want to teach it. I just learned this thing, I want to teach it. And I'm like, okay, well, should I fight this? Like, cause why did I want to be a famous author? I want to have something on TV and, you know, all the ego stuff of, I want to be super successful. And when you strip some of that stuff away, it's like, okay, well, what makes me happy? What makes me fulfilled? And what makes it so I'm living my dream and not somebody else's? And I decided, okay, well, I'm going to spend more of my time, 80-20 rule. I'm going to spend 80% of my time teaching, 20% of my time doing these other fiction projects. And I just did fine. Like this, like it felt easier. It felt like I was, instead of swimming against the stream, I'm going along with it. And that is this flow feeling that you get when you're doing, I don't know about what you're supposed to do, but something that aligns with who you are. And I have a talk that I gave at 20 Books last year, talking about how you don't have to hate marketing. You just have to find something that you like doing that happens to sell books. And if you end up like CJ, you find like, oh, this podcast, I can see that it's selling way more books. It's like, well, then you keep doing it. If you find that it isn't, but you still like going on screen and whatnot, you invite your readers to a weekly live where you talk about your books. I've seen folks do this and have great success. KM Shea does it with her fairy tale books, and she's amazing. She's really funny. And so she does these great lives that she does with her readers, and her readers eat it up, and it goes really well for her. And it's like, you can find an alignment of what you like to do that sells your books, because it doesn't all have to be something we dislike. And so right now, that's like the thing I'm really trying to tell a lot of people, is that like, you don't have to hate this stuff. And so in part, I think in the beginning, a lot of it was, I see people making mistakes and I want them to fix it. But it's evolved. And I would say here now, it's like, I see people being unhappy and also making mistakes. And I want to see if I can kind of fix two things at once by saying, okay, well, maybe the things you're making a lot of mistakes on, that's not where you even want to be paying attention to. And you want to actually do this instead because you actually enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for me, when I hired you guys' company, I overwrote the heck out of my synopsis. It was far from a sizzling synopsis as your, you know, the book you wrote, you know, and I read after the fact, you know, after I hired you guys. And thanks to you guys, I'm a lot more confident. I've gotten a lot more conversions. I haven't even started sending ads yet, you know, started paying for ads yet. So I think there's hope, right? And, you know, and I just know everyone out there, so many people have a story to tell, right? But now the journey really starts when the marketing happens. It's like, hey, bam, congratulations. You wrote a book. Now you got to go market it. And to your point, I don't think I ever hated marketing. I just wasn't strong in it. And I would always like you said, info dump. So that's something that I learned to like, just cut it out and, you know, stick to the, you know, be brief and be impactful and powerful. Let me ask you this though, Brian, because I've been looking forward to chatting with you for a while. I know you have, you know, these great educational books and your great, you know, viral superhero, you know, book series. Do you have any other books planned, or is there any, how many are cooking up there, Brian?
No, absolutely. Well, I've had another one on the nonfiction side cooking in my head for a while about writing to market, because I do think it's one of the things that authors struggle with the most. People think that if I try to write something based on research that is similar in some ways to other people's books, that is cheating, and I'm not a creative person anymore, so I'm going to go write this thing that combines seven different genres instead. And it's like, I absolutely understand the desire to not go with what, you know, not go with the trends. But, you know, I was just, we're getting books for my daughter. She learned to read last year. And so we're loading her up. And there's this author, Dan Gutman, I believe is his name. And he writes these books like he's not an indie, but he's a good example for this. He writes these books called My Weird School. And they're goofy. They're like in the Captain Underpants vein of stuff. They're like young chapter readers type thing. And they're all just some pun, like this teacher is crazy. So it's like Mrs. Rupee is loopy or whatever. Mr. Klutz is nuts. And it's basically the same book over and over again, really. Like, it's the same kind of deal. Oh my gosh, this teacher's insane and this kid hates learning, but it all kind of works out in the end. And he's written 130 of these. And there's spin-off series. There's like My Weird School Days, my Weirdest School Days, whatever. It's the same kind of deal. Say every book's about the same. And I bet this guy still enjoys the heck out of himself because it's very popular. Like, I think he's probably done quite well for himself. But each story is funny. It's weird and funny. And the kids, you know, my kid loves it. And he's entertaining people all around the world, but he's writing the same book every time, more or less. And so does he not count as an author because he's writing to a trend that he's established? Is he just a tradesman and not an author? It's like, no, he's absolutely an author. He's entertaining millions of kids, and he found a niche for himself. And that is why he is now a full-time author. And I think every author who find success. I'm thinking now of Catherine Mara, who writes, I think they're enemies to lovers books, but I could be getting the trope slightly wrong. But she writes this specific romance trope. And she said it better than any indie author I've ever heard say it. This was at Inkers Con earlier this year. And she said, I want to be known as the author that readers look to for this specific trope. Not even this specific subgenre, this specific plot. I want to write all my books centered around this plot so that readers are used to it and they know me and they like me and they trust me. And I love that. She has found this corner that she writes in, and she's very successful. She's sold over $1 million worth of books. And she's very successful for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons is she found a lane that she knew she could crush it in. And then she didn't write 7 different series and different directions. She said, I'm not only going to write this popular subgenre, I'm going to write this specific trope in all of my books so that my readers know that they're going to get this trope when they buy my books. And I think that's amazing. I think it's brave. I think that her telling people this, I think that some people probably in the back of the room are like, oh, what a bunch of, huh? But she's done great. The young children chapter book readers done great. And they're writing the same kind of book over and over again because it's selling, because it's making them money, and because they're still finding ways to enjoy it. And I think that goes back to what we're talking about earlier, questioning those assumptions, right? I have to write in this specific way. Maybe, but you could also be open to, I can write some of those stories into these specific books, or I can write some of those stories once I've already found my niche.
She did that because of the emotional impact, and he did that. It was like Dan Goodman. He keeps on writing the same stuff because of that same emotional impact that he gets from his readers, their readers. Yeah,
I'm sure of it.
That's genius. I never really thought about it like that, because my trope is like one, you know, two best friends. Dante wants to, you know, help protect the world, and his best friend Dwayne wants to, you know, see the world burn. You know.
Yeah.
You know. Similar stuff, but yeah, tell me this, Brian, what kind of advice, you know, just one piece of advice that you could give to, you know, an author like me who has yet to hit the bestseller mark?
So one piece of advice I would give is that the first series you write doesn't necessarily have to be your most successful. It can be a series that you're learning on.
Mm-hmm.
Because many authors do not find their greatest success until their second, third, or fourth series. And so for authors who are like, yeah, but I'm writing the fourth book in my 12-book series that sells $10 worth of copies a month. Like, well, maybe you consider wrapping it up in book 4 or book 5 so that you can tell some of those stories and go into your second series, because you're going to be a much better writer in the first book of that next series than you were at the first book of this series. And it doesn't mean you failed. It means that you've learned and you've grown. And if you, sometimes you got to be like LeBron James and take your talent to South Beach. You've got to move teams. And look at what he did, thinking about it.
Yeah.
So for those who aren't into sports, LeBron James got his Cleveland Cavaliers. He's from the Cleveland area. got his Cleveland Cavaliers almost to win a championship, but on his first team, his first series, he couldn't quite do it. No. He goes and teams up with some people. He goes down to the Miami Heat, wins two championships, right? I think two.
Yep, back to back.
Then he says, all right, I'm going back to the first team. I'm going back to the first genre. I'm gonna go figure it out now. And he did win a championship. He did eventually win a championship and bring it home. But first, he had to try something different. First, he had to try his second series. And his second series was a success. But if he had stuck with the first series his entire life, it's possible he never would have hit the bestseller list as far as NBA players is concerned.
Makes a ton of sense, because I've been advised to go write this other series that I started geared to different demographics, male, female, how to love and be loved, from my years of studying psychology and very interesting perspective. I've never thought about it like that. It's brilliant. Well, I think this is a great point to wrap up, Ryan. Can you tell me, where we all can find a little bit more information about you and where we can find your books?
Sure. So you can find out more about me at authorsadvertise.com. It is the registration page for my quarterly free challenge that I do to teach authors about ads. You can find my nonfiction books, self-publishing with Amazon ads, self-publishing and email marketing, and fiction blurbs, The Best Page Forward Way, which is co-written with Phoebe Ravencraft. My fiction books, we've got the viral superhero series. Those are all available on Amazon. Some of them, like the viral superhero, is also available on Audible. So you can have your fill either way. And yeah, we just, if you ever do decide you want to learn ads, get a blurb written for you, just join the challenge. You'll find out more about us, and then we can go from there. We just love getting this opportunity to help people far and wide.
Yeah, that's how it started with me, Brian, is I joined and I, sat in on a few of the meetings. And then a few months later, I keep on reading some of your amazing emails. And then what do you know? Boom. And then I'm that much more privy on actually how the marketing things go. And it's been a pleasure to have you on, Brian. It's been a blessing. And yeah, thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. And thank you for reaching out. It's always a pleasure to connect with a wonderful Best Page Forward customer.
There we go. Appreciate it, Brian.